There are now more than 4 million cases of the coronavirus in this country.
Yeah, and Florida is really bad. So much so that President Trump now says it's too risky to hold a convention there.
The timing for this event is not right.
I'm Rachel Martin along with David Greene, and this is Up First from NPR News. The Trump administration ordered China to close its consulate in Houston. Now China has retaliated. They have ordered the shutdown of the U.S. consulate in Chengdu.
One example of these tensions, four Chinese nationals. The Justice Department says they lied on their visa applications and were stealing information for the Chinese government. They said they came to the U.S. just to do research. What does all of this mean for the precarious relationship between the United States and China? Stay with us. We have the news you need to start your day.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Integrative Therapeutics, creator of Physicians Elemental Diet, a medical food developed by clinicians for the dietary management of IBS, IBD, and SIBO under the supervision of a physician. Support also comes from NPR sponsor HelloFresh, the meal kit delivery service. Go to HelloFresh.com/UpFirst80 and use code UpFirst80 to get $80 off, including free shipping on the first box. Additional restrictions apply.
Republicans were planning to hold part of their upcoming convention in the city of Jacksonville, Florida, but not anymore.
I looked at my team and I said, the timing for this event is not right. It's just not right with what's happened recently, the flare-up in Florida. To have a big convention, it's not the right time.
Not the right time because as of now, the U.S. has more than 4 million coronavirus cases. Florida alone reported more than 10,000 new infections yesterday.
And NPR's Greg Allen is in Florida. He joins us from Miami. Hi, Greg.
Hi, David.
Let's start with this decision to cancel the Jacksonville portion of the Republican convention. How disappointing is this to the people in the party?
Well, I think the more common feeling here is actually relief. It became a very difficult thing to figure out how this was going to happen. Jacksonville's mayor, Lenny Curry, is the former head of the Republican Party here in Florida, and he lobbied to host it. You know, you recall after President Trump said he wanted to move it out of Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the coronavirus cases really began to surge here in Florida, including in Jacksonville. This week, Jacksonville's sheriff said, given the pandemic and the short notice, he would not be able to provide adequate security for the convention unless something changed. And then after the president's announcement yesterday, both the sheriff and the mayor released a statement saying that they appreciated him, quote, considering our public health and safety concerns and making this incredibly difficult decision. You know, this avoids the unenviable scenario for Republican officials in Florida for having to say no to the president.
Right. So a sigh of relief in many ways. Well, what is the situation? 10,000 new cases yesterday alone? I mean, is this just still getting worse?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I don't think there's any other way to cut it. The state set a new record yesterday with 173 deaths from COVID-19. That's the most we've had yet. You know, as you mentioned at the top, more than 10,000 new infections. At this rate, Florida will soon have more cases of the coronavirus than New York. But doctors and officials say they do see some signs the surge in cases may have peaked here. Governor DeSantis says a key indicator of the number of people coming in with flu and COVID-19 symptoms to hospital emergency departments is down.
When people are not coming to the ED in as big a numbers as they were 2 weeks ago, and actually it's less than half, the last few days have been less than half than what it was the first week of July, you know, that is a positive trend.
You know, the rate of people testing positive for the virus is also starting to come down very slowly, and these are all good signs.
Yeah. I mean, have hospitals been able to keep up despite this massive surge?
Yes. Across the state, we hear repeatedly from doctors and administrators that they have adequate capacity. Some hospitals, especially smaller ones, you know, in rural communities, are seeing their intensive care units full. But Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis says statewide, you know, ICUs are only 85% full. Doctors point out that many of those in ICUs aren't even, COVID-19 patients. Even in Miami, which is where we're seeing most of the cases, hospitals are still doing some elective procedures, urgent and emergency surgeries. And they have the ability to add beds as needed, they say. You know, the biggest concern is staffing.
Tell me more about Miami, where you are. You said it's the epicenter.
Yeah, I mean, we're still seeing over 2,000 cases a day here just in Miami-Dade County alone. The positivity rate is still near 20%. Officials say orders limiting gatherings, though, and requiring face coverings are working. Most of the spread here, though, is among friends and family members, especially people who live in multi-generational households. The mayor here in Miami asked people to start thinking about wearing masks at home just to prevent that kind of spread.
Wow. All right, that's the situation in Miami and in the state of Florida. NPR's Greg Allen. Greg, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Guess you could say this is how tit for tat works in diplomacy.
Right. So here's what happened. Earlier this week, the U.S. ordered China to close down its consulate in Houston. They were supposed to do that by today. Beijing warned of retaliation, and now we've got that. Today, China moved to shut down the U.S. consulate in the Chinese city of Chengdu.
And NPR's Emily Fang has been following all of this. She's in Beijing. Hi, Emily.
Hey, David.
So tell me more about this decision that I guess was not all that unexpected from Beijing today.
Right. China said this was reciprocity for the abrupt closing of its consulate this week. And then today, the foreign ministry added that they closed the Chengdu consulate because several employees there had engaged in activities not in accordance with their stated identities and interfered in China's internal affairs. So a cryptic line that seems to refer to espionage. But the ministry did not offer more details when we asked about what those activities might be. The U.S. government has also not given a detailed explanation about why it decided to shut down China's consulate in Houston. The State Department kind of cryptically said that it was to protect American intellectual property. The department's top official for East Asia, David Stilwell, said several people there were helping informants who were collecting information for the Chinese military. And then yesterday afternoon, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said they closed down that consulate because it was a hub of spying and IP theft. China, of course, denies this and calls those allegations talking nonsense.
I mean, let's just think about this. In the last year, we've had a trade war between these two countries, numerous rounds of sanctions on each other's officials and companies, and now the closing of these consulates. I mean, how significant is this next step here?
It is very serious because we are seeing the beginnings of a rupture in the foreign policy institutions that keep communication and people flowing between these two countries. What's not clear right now is whether the diplomats at the two consulates in Chengdu and Houston, respectively, will be allowed to stay in the countries where they were assigned or if they're going to be expelled once the consulates are shut. Neither government responded to my queries about this. But in China, foreign policy experts and officials are defiant. I spoke to Zhu Shulong, who is an international relations expert at Beijing's Tsinghua University, about this today. He's saying, without the U.S., China will survive. We will thrive. The U.S. cannot change the trend of China's development. Our technology and military will continue to progress, if not a little more slowly. He also said that he fears military confrontation between the U.S. and China is a real possibility in the South China Sea, which is where the U.S. contests China's territorial claims. And he says we might even see a severance in U.S.-China relations.
Military confrontation? I mean, we're getting to that point, potentially?
Not yet, but U.S.-China relations are at their worst point in over 30 years, and how this relationship proceeds will depend largely on what the U.S. chooses to do in the next 4 months in the run-up to the November presidential elections. In China, the approach is Trump is playing up its anti-China rhetoric to play to his voter base. And the hope is that after the presidential elections, he will calm down a little bit. And that's in part why they chose the U.S. consulate in Chengdu to close down and not a bigger consulate such as America's Hong Kong or Shanghai consulate.
All right. NPR's Emily Fang in Beijing. Emily, thanks a lot.
Thanks, David.
And let's dig deeper into these broader tensions between the two countries. The Justice Department says that four Chinese nationals doing research in the United States committed visa fraud.
Three of the defendants are in federal custody. The fourth is a fugitive and is holed up at the Chinese consulate in San Francisco.
And NPR Justice correspondent Ryan Lucas has been following this. Hi, Ryan.
Good morning.
Tell me more, if you can, about these four people and what they're charged with exactly.
So the Justice Department says that these four individuals got visas to come do research in the U.S. They were doing research in cutting-edge fields, things like neurology, medicine, machine learning, artificial intelligence. But the Justice Department says that these folks lied on their visa applications by denying that they had links to or were members of the Chinese military. One defendant, for instance, allegedly works in a Chinese military lab and holds a rank equivalent to a major. Another is allegedly a uniformed officer in China's Air Force. In court documents recently filed in California, federal prosecutors say that these individuals appear to be part of a Chinese government program to send military scientists to the U.S. under false pretense, with cover stories, so to speak. And American officials say that this is part of a broader effort by China to steal research and intellectual property from the United States, including from universities. And this is a huge source of tension in U.S.-China relations.
Well, let me ask you, as Rachel mentioned, one of these individuals we believe is hiding in the Chinese consulate in San Francisco?
That's right. Prosecutors say that this woman was a researcher at the University of California, Davis. She said on her application that she'd never served in the military. Investigators say that they found photos of her in a military uniform and evidence that she worked at a Chinese Air Force Medical University. At some point after an FBI interview with her in June, prosecutors say that she fled to the consulate in San Francisco, and the feds say that she is, in fact, still there.
Well, I mean, I was talking to Emily about the broader relationship right now. And, you know, I mean, things are just so tense between these two countries. Right. How do these cases fit into that picture?
American officials, including FBI Director Christopher Wray and the Attorney General, yesterday we heard the Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, they have been taking a harder line against China and what the U.S. views as a range of malicious activity on China's part, and in particular, economic espionage. FBI Director Christopher Wray recently said that the FBI opens a new China-related counterintelligence case every 10 hours, every 10 hours. Wow. And U.S. officials say that China is using all sorts of people, including researchers, like in this case here, in its spying operations and economic theft.
Ryan, I want to ask you about one other thing. Other Justice Department news. The Inspector General now, it looks like, is opening investigation into recent actions against protesters that we saw in the city of Portland and then also in Lafayette Square in Washington, D.C. What more can you tell us?
Right. Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz said that he would look at the use of force in Portland this month. He says that he'll coordinate that investigation with the Department of Homeland Security Inspector General. And that's important because a lot of the allegations of wrongdoing are actually against DHS agents. And then the Inspector General is also going to look at the Justice Department's role responding to protests, as you mentioned, here in Lafayette Square in Washington, D.C. And that, of course, is where federal law enforcement forcibly cleared protesters. That was back in June, ahead of the president's walk to a nearby church, which obviously was quite controversial and drew a lot of criticism.
Thank you for covering all of this for us, Ryan.
My pleasure.
It's NPR Justice Correspondent Ryan Lucas.
Before we say goodbye today, I just want to acknowledge a mistake that I made yesterday in Up First. I was talking about the Trump administration's decision to send in federal agents to Chicago, Kansas City, Albuquerque, and I talked about those agents as being federal troops. I should not have used that word to describe them. These are federal agents or federal investigators, and I apologize for the error.
That is Up First for Friday, July 24th. I'm David Green.
And I'm Rachel Martin. Up First is produced by Emma Telkoff. Our editors are Catherine Whalen, Denise Couture, and Steve Mullis. Our social strategist is Casey Nunix. Our executive producer is Kenya Young. Follow us on Twitter. We are at Up First.
And you know, the news also doesn't stop on the weekends. And no. You should remember that Up First airs on Saturdays as well. Lulu Garcia Navarro and Scott Simon are going to have the news for you. It'll be right here in this feed or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a good weekend, everybody.
A Minneapolis business owner's daughter is called out publicly for racist, anti-Black tweets. Fighting to save his business and trying to make amends, he calls on a prominent Black Muslim leader for help. He's an Arab Muslim.
And I said, Brother Makram, I'm here to learn. Tell me what to do.
To hear what happens next, listen to Code Switch from NPR.